Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute and answer your questions live on YouTube. If you want to help us out, be sure to subscribe to our channel and add us to your podcast feed over on iTunes or Google Play. And if you want to represent TFC, head over to our merch store for t-shirts, stickers, mugs, and posters. You can go to designbyhumans.com/shop/theflutechannel. Finally, if you're looking into buying a new flute, be sure to check out the Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. With our code TFC at checkout, you'll be able to try up to 3 flutes or piccolos, and whichever instrument you choose, you get an extended 18-month warranty on it. So be sure at checkout to put in the special code TFC at flutesforsale.com. Now on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Amelie.
How's it going, Amelie?
I'm good, how are you?
You're good, yeah? Yeah. So we're going to answer some questions today. We're going to read some in the chat, as usual. As per usual, but we have some questions right now, so we're definitely going to... There was Angus Robbins asks, I'm starting to play pieces with notes in the third register. One of the problems I find is that my saliva often gets in the way. This doesn't happen in other lower octaves when playing notes like above E6. E6, maybe E5 is what they mean. I often not always have a problem with small amounts of saliva getting in the way and affecting the sound. Do you have any advice that they might try?
Yeah. Probably because the airspeed is greater in the high register than the low register. Maybe her lips are tighter, so then the saliva gets in the way. And it doesn't happen in the lower register. I could understand that.
Right.
It's not easy because...
No, it's not easy at all.
You have saliva, you have saliva, you know? I don't know what to say. Because I've had that problem. But a good thing is that when you're nervous, usually you make less saliva. A lot of artists say when they're nervous, their mouth is too dry. And that's a problem.
That is a problem, yeah.
So maybe when you're nervous, you don't have to worry about that too much because it's not going to happen as much. But also... I don't know, maybe make sure you swallow your saliva before you start playing. Yeah. And whenever you have more time...
swallowing the saliva,
you know,
yeah.
Whenever you have more time during the piece. Because sometimes you just have enough for a little... But sometimes you can...
And plus quick air, yeah.
Plus you can kind of leave it in the back of your mouth. When you don't... Like, did you ever have that problem?
Oh, when I was in high school, I guess, you know, like a lot of spitting, you know, it's usually at the beginning of the flute stage when...
Yeah, because I make a lot of saliva, because sometimes I have that, I have too much. But yeah, I just try to leave it there, you know, and play, but not let it go in the front of the mouth. And then I try to swallow as soon as I can, but really it's not easy to control. Don't think about food while you're playing.
No. Not at all.
Don't
totally.
Think about food.
No.
Chocolate and ice cream, that's for sure. But I don't know what else to say. Maybe start with that and tell us if it helps.
Yeah,
know?
Totally. That can be a
maybe
good start.
Maybe also if the tongue is moving too much, it might create more saliva, I would imagine. Do you think so?
Oh, yeah?
If the tongue moves a lot, because the saliva, the glands are under the tongue.
The glands, and some of them are.
If you're moving a lot, you know, or pressing in some way with your tongue, pressing down too much on them, I don't know. Maybe
I also see I also see a lot of people spitting with the that causes a lot.
French tonguing with the the tongue between the lips. That could be an issue, too. But that's not what she seemed to be talking about.
No!
She seemed to be talking about just having too much saliva.
Too much saliva, yeah. Getting in the way of the sound. So,
so
it means the liquid's coming out, yeah.
You know, going down.
Yeah.
And then try to swallow whenever you can. And,
that's interesting.
Just check if you're not doing anything with your tongue that is stimulating those glands under the tongue. I don't know.
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Sigurd de Mazar says they have a question about the metronome. They're not used to it, and they find it very disturbing. It is either they ignore the metronome and play the music, or spend a lot of energy listening to the beat on the metronome and forgetting about the notes. Do you have any advice on this?
Okay. It's very common.
Totally. People, you're not alone. Metronome. Yeah, you're not alone.
The metronome is your friend.
Yeah.
But maybe what you could do is start by putting the metronome very slowly, because this way you have more time to think, you know? If you put it fast, then you have less time to think. That's just a logical thing. Yeah, it's clear, yeah. And then maybe you just sing the rhythms or sing the piece with your metronome without playing your flute. Mm-hmm. So this way you just have rhythm in mind.
Rhythm in mind,
so it's
right.
Only one thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Metronome, rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe after that you take your flute and you don't put the metronome, but you internalize your own metronome. You don't put a real one. You just figure out where in your body you feel the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Is it in your toes that you go like this, you know, you tap the beat with your toes? Is it in your chest? Is it in your head? Is it, you know, when you hear music and you want to, you know, just dance it a bit, where do you feel the rhythm?
Yeah, where do you feel the rhythm?
And then you have to refer to that pulsation, because in the end, the real point is, the real goal is to internalize the metronome. And have be able to refer to the pulse all the time without having an external metronome.
Uh-huh.
So maybe you start with that. Maybe your pulse will move a little bit, but you start by at least having a pulse and referring to it.
Yeah, at least having a pulse. Yeah.
In your body, and then maybe the next step would be to put the metronome and internalize the outside pulse of the metronome and be able to play. But first thing, I would put the metronome very slowly and sing the rhythm. And if you're not able to do it, then you put it even slower. It's not about it's not about playing fast, it's about playing steady. Because the rhythm is the most important thing in music.
Yeah, rhythm is pretty much the most important thing,
the
yeah.
basic things. When human beings started playing music, they didn't put harmonies first.
No, they just had rhythms.
Rhythms, yeah. You know, they danced and they went and clapped probably, and then they added melodies, and then they added harmonies.
But... Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another tip, I think, would be a lot of those metronomes that are on apps, you know, app metronomes, they have strong beats and weak beats. I always try to think about letting people know to just have strong beats only.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
That way you don't think you know, when you're practicing it, and
it's
you miss a breath.
Thing
yeah,
to
one less thing. Yeah,
think about.
Yeah,
you're totally right.
Yeah,
plus you're right if you miss a.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because it's a big thing, and a lot of people don't listen to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then you have to go again.
Yeah.
In 1, 2, 3, 4, and make sure you're on the right beat, and it's disturbing. Just put strong beats.
Yeah, just put strong beats, which means no downbeats. So say if it's 4/4, some metronomes on apps and even on big metronomes, the mechanical ones, they go like beep, 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 beep. You know. Yeah.
Or
yeah, exactly. Instead, we just want D, 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 D.
Usually you can select 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you just have to select one.
Yeah.
Like one beat per measure, but really it's just so you don't have to worry about that extra thing that you don't want to worry about that.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart.
So hopefully that answers your question. Valentine's Day is coming up soon.
Yay!
It's on Wednesday. Yay, Valentine's Day. So, I know we have a lot of romantic music in the flute. And we have a lot of favorites. And I know one of them is The Meditation by Massenet. And
it's a violin piece, though.
It's a violin piece. But Paul Tafanel, who, you know, is one of the big flute guys, he decided in France back in the day to do a lot of stuff like that.
Violin things can be played on the
flute. Yeah, a lot of things. So never hesitate to. But the melody at the beginning is really sweet. We don't have to play it through the whole thing,
beautiful.
But like it's a beautiful melody, right? Like.
Oh, you wanted me.
Yeah,
to play?
Why not?
Why not?
Thank you. yeah, it's a nice little piece. You know, romantic music is always good, and there's a lot of it online that's free to try. You can check it out at flutetunes.com, I think. This is a meditation from the opera Thais, T-H-A-I-S. Yeah. Very lovely playing.
After a couple of glasses of wine tonight.
No, we didn't drink at all. No. great. So let us know what your favorite romantic piece is in the comments, and we'll definitely love to know what you guys, how you guys like that. The guy, the person we answered that metronome question just told us that they think, I think I can play metronome instead of music when I'm traveling on train. I actually try to sight sing on the train in the morning and hope people don't hear me. That's a, you know, it's like.
So he's already.
Ways of, yeah, there's ways of, yeah, that's already a good thing, yeah.
Maybe what he could do then is put the metronome.
Someone also said just use the light as well. Instead of no sound, just look at the light tapping. Oh, yeah. That helps.
It's tough.
It's tough? Oh, okay. I used
but
to do that.
Start by.
Yeah, so if you guys are. She's not actually trying to play, she's just blowing in. It's a mistake here. It's just. Yeah. Yeah, for the people who don't know, this is like sort of like.
Marking or
marked,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over blowing it so it doesn't make a sound, but this way you hear the metronome better, maybe.
Mm.
Just saying, maybe that would help.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I don't know.
What do you think about the Yamaha 212? Is it a good flute? The 212 or 211 or 212 is newer? I may buy it. That's the basic flute. It's like there's
and
the 222, 212. They're all super close. Yeah, the triangle flute. It's a good standard like student flute.
Good flutes.
Well, yes, usually well built. Yeah, totally. So it's worth a buy if it's your first flute. It's no professional flute, but it's definitely a flute that can stand the test of time and is a good flute to start with, I think.
Yeah.
It's one of those good ones to start with, usually. Not an endorsement. Just our general thoughts about that, yeah. That's cool. How many years of practice until you're a good player? Victor Coco.
Depends
how much you catch up on it.
I had
a
teacher who said 15 years,
right.
10 to 15 years with a lot of work and a little bit of talent.
Then again, I knew somebody that knew that learned in 3 years and got a job. You know?
Also depends, you know, all depends. On your age, your background. Yeah. Some people have never touched any instrument. Some people have played the violin or the piano or whatever. They already know music. They just learn the instrument. So if you start at 6 years old, you don't learn at the same pace as a 11-year-old. It's all, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully that answers your question. Yeah. Pretty much.
But I think it's like anything.
It's like anything.
With time,
it's a very general question.
More,
yeah. Yeah.
But I have, to like, some people say 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
But there are exceptions. No,
yeah, there's exceptions. Yeah, exactly. Everyone always says 10,000.
I would say feeling very comfortable. Yeah, maybe 12, 13 years.
Maybe, yeah.
And then I was like, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, for yourself, you mean? Ah, okay.
Myself.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Like, I started at 11, and I can say feeling very comfortable, maybe 23, That's when I was, like, probably at my best, because I had time, and I had the, you know, I still practiced a lot back then, maybe 23, would be, like, maybe 12 years. Depends, you know, on a lot of stuff. If you have a good teacher, if you, you know.
Yeah. There's also that rule of 10,000, you know, 10,000 hours and all that stuff. You know, there's so many different statistics and ways of thinking about it, but whatever.
I don't know about those things.
Me too.
Because
yeah.
If you practice in the wrong way because you don't have the right information, what are these hours doing for you? I don't know.
Yeah. Just to answer that question to Christina about the flutes, she's like, is it good to a certain study level, the 222? I knew people who played the 222 in professional orchestras, you know. It doesn't, like, that flute can last as long as you get it repaired often and get it fixed, you know, like.
You might want to have a higher level flute.
And that segues me to the next question by Michael Mendez, which is sort of similar, is what is the first thing you guys look out for when before buying a flute? And, you know, mechanism, make sure if it's a used flute, get it verified by a technician, all those types of things. Usually they're being sold by technicians most of the time. Sometimes they're being sold independently. I don't know. Depends what your needs are, you know? That's mm-hmm. all, really. You ask yourself, do you want a solid silver flute that's the whole body that's silver, but not the keys? Or do you want all of it to be silver, including the keys? Do you want it all to be nickel silver, but with French holes? Or, you know, there's so many different options. Find out what's your budget, all those types of things. Hopefully that helps. How would you approach your parents? This is a good question. How would you approach your parents if you want to get a professional flute that's expensive? That's a huge question, because most people have to ask their parents for it. Have to ask their parents, and it's a big investment, right? I think usually if you get to that point, your parents kind of understand that this is going to be something that you really find important. Plus, professional flutes go for such a big, vast of price. You know, there's such a wide margin.
Yeah.
There's 30,000, then there's 2,000. You know, it's...
Yeah. I think, you know, you personally, how it happened for me was my teacher was saying you should get a higher level flute
mm-hmm.
because you're getting at the maximum of what you can get out of this flute. You know, you're kind of... And then I told my dad and again and again, but in a subtle manner, just mm-hmm. that, you know, my teacher was saying that. And then at one point he said, well, you know what, maybe it's time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it depends on your parents. You know, you don't negotiate with everyone the same way.
No.
Some people you have to, you know, and you have to know what is their budget, because you also have to be realistic with what they can afford, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but talking about it and being patient, because they might have also to save for that. It's not something they can buy overnight.
No.
Depends. Yeah, depends. Know, on the parents. I don't know. Maybe their parents are very rich, but you have to prepare them, because it's a big, it's a lot of money. And if you're practicing a lot, they mm-hmm. might feel like, yeah, it's something important. If you're not, maybe they'll feel, well, mm-hmm. is it really necessary to put that much money? And mm-hmm. if you do your research, and as you said, there are different...
So many different prices,
and maybe
yeah.
if you do your research and you say, oh, for the price, that is a very good flute. Mm-hmm. You know, there are more expensive than that. But I found this, which would be a good compromise. Parents mm-hmm. love compromises.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know? Yeah. And I also stress, go try the flutes. Don't just think, oh, the price is good, I'll get it.
No, you
figure out a way
them.
And go and try them. Yeah. If, you know, there's so many different places that can offer it in many different parts of the world. Yeah, hopefully that answers your question. You know, don't be afraid to talk to your parents about it if that's who you have to talk to. Daniel Perkins asks us, who is your favorite flutist these days? Do you often listen to recordings and copy their sound, vibrato, etc.?
I'm your favorite flutist.
No, you're my favorite flutist, next to me. I used to, I'll answer a little bit this first, is I used to copy some flutists and stuff like that. It's a cool thing to do. It's fun. It's a cool exercise to understand how other flutists make music, because there's so many different music's so wonderful that an interpretation of music is so different for everybody. I always try to encourage myself and other people to explore and record yourself and listen back and try to really create the experience you wanted to create, you know. So I know there's a story with Robert Dick, I think, or something like that. He went to Julius Baker, and he went to a lesson for it with him. And prior to the lesson, he listened to all of his recordings of a certain piece, and he tried to emulate every single thing. And Robert Dick's a very amazing flute player, and so he did that. And he went to Julius Baker and did it, and he said to him, I think... Julius Baker said to Robert... You're playing like me. Come back and play like you. I don't want to hear myself, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
We don't need two of
me. Yeah, you don't need two of me.
But
and,
in the meantime, like, when you're building yourself, you also need others, you know? Great painters have imitated the styles of others, mm-hmm. and then they find themselves. You mm-hmm. can't just find yourself out of nothing, I think. Mm-hmm. And... It's a, you know, like in that book, Steal Like an Artist, which mm-hmm. is a great book. That's what he says. He says, artists steal from one another. That's how mm-hmm. you learn. That's how you... Bach yeah. used to just transcribe music. That's how he learned how to compose.
Yeah.
So I think it's good to find people you like and play. I used to play along with CDs. Mm-hmm, you know, put a CD
yeah, I used to play too.
I would say, mm-hmm. oh, I just had a lesson with Larieux yesterday, but joking, you know, because I mm-hmm, played with him. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then maybe I would, after a while, I started to listen to different recordings and pick what I liked from different mm-hmm. ones. You know, mm-hmm. I would be like, I don't like this from this one, but I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step after I would do that was to play it, mm-hmm. record myself, and then pick from what I did, what I liked and didn't like, and then find myself through that. But I think it's a good idea to emulate others. But you still have to be aware that's mm-hmm. what you're doing, and that the goal in the end, as you said, is to find your own way of playing. But there are steps in there, you know? You can't yeah. just... Dali was not Dali at no. 15 years old.
No, exactly. Yeah. Was there anybody that you liked the most? Me, I liked Peter Lukas Graf.
Yeah, I liked him too a lot.
He's still alive, and yeah, he's a good flute player. More and more nowadays, I don't listen to flute players that much. I listen to more other musicians as well from other instruments.
Other instruments. It's interesting yeah. to get... I think it's also a stages of life, you know? You mm-hmm. listen a lot to your instrument when you're younger because you want to have a clear idea of what sound you want, what vibrato you want, and all mm-hmm. those things. And then at one point, you're like, okay, I listened to enough flute. Now let's listen to other instruments and see how they do.
Yeah.
Their music and mm-hmm. try to be not just influenced, but
inspired yeah.
by their way.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully that answers your question. Yeah.
But yeah.
There we
I
go.
I like a lot of flutists. Robert yeah. Aitken.
Robert Aitken's good. Yeah. There's a lot of couple of records. Yeah. There's some good stuff. A lot of it's online now, which is great.
And I had a couple of recordings of a lot of them.
Yeah, there's so many.
So many.
There's even Galway and stuff like that. Galway, I always listen
Galway,
to him a lot.
Galway, Galois. Yeah. Patrick Galois, I really liked him because mm-hmm. he's so original, different mm-hmm. in his way of interpreting things.
Okay. How are flute competitions? I've never competed before and I have a competition on Monday. Well, there's so many different types of competitions, but you're probably the most general is like Kiwanis or CMC, the Canadian Music. Like, it's a, you know... It's a solitary type of thing, I always feel, you know? You go there, you play,
yeah.
you know? I think that it's a battle of your own brain, I think, your own wits,
I used to do it for, yeah, the goal for me was to give me a goal. Really.
Yeah.
So I would be like, okay, I have to learn that type of repertoire, pick my pieces, and then it gave me goals to work towards, so that was mm-hmm. good. Maybe because just practicing for your own, like at one point you have to.
Yeah, helps, you know? Have to, yeah.
And I know competitions are for competing, but I was trying in a way to compete against myself, you know, to just grow, use that as a growing tool. Because you don't want it to destroy you, you want it to make you stronger. So I would use that as, you know, I'm playing in front of people, I'm learning to deal with my nerves. I'm learning to, I'm learning a lot of stuff. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. Maybe I never win. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? It's just a...
But I always win. That's how I used to see it. Because mm-hmm. in the end, you won because you got out, you did something, and you learned. And then you grew.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I approach...
That's a good approach. Very interesting, yeah.
It's, you have to be proud of yourself. Yeah. Because you prepared... You went there.
You did that.
You did that. If it doesn't go mm-hmm. well, you learn from it. If it goes well, you also
yeah. You learn from both anyways, ways. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Totally.
And you get mm-hmm. usually judges write comments, and then you can use that and
yeah
go further with your mm-hmm. playing.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that answers your question a little bit. yeah.
Usually you go, you play, and other people play, and usually you can hear others and they can hear you. It's open. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like a concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with judges and with mm-hmm. and they have your music and they look mm-hmm. at it and They give you a grade and they give you some comments.
Yeah.
Usually they're in writing. They don't tell you.
No, no. They usually give you the papers at the end.
Yeah.
In some of your other videos, you mentioned you were performing Chaminade sometimes. Did you perform it yet? No, you're going to perform it in 2 weeks or three weeks.
2 weeks, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've learned it. We've done two episodes of just learning that with just practicing, I think. Yeah. It was two episodes. Very, very good lessons. If you guys want to learn the Chaminade with Amelie, look at those two videos. They're really great. You can sit down and just take the score and jot things down, jot ideas, play along and stuff. Yeah. It's really awesome.
There's some breathing marks that I chose and sometimes I'm not sure, but you know,
those always things, move them
it's
around.
It's a work in progress. And when you use the video, you can also do your own, you know. You can say, I don't like that breathing there. Let's breathe here instead. And it's all good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's all about finding your way to make it beautiful and easy. Because usually if you make it easier for yourself, it's going to be more beautiful. And that's the whole
point. That's the whole point of music. Exactly. It's very nice. Yeah, it's true. Christiane also wants to know, is there a way I can learn how to fix flutes? Is there a good book that teaches it in an easy way? Yes and no. The Jim Phelan book, the Jim Phelan repair book is really good. I would go to fluteworld.com. They have a lot of literature on that. So fluteworld.com and look for flute repair books. But the best way is to go and apprentice with somebody. I know Christiane is in Egypt, so it's a bit tougher. But if you look on Strawbringer's website, they have a list of all the world's, they have a big list of repair people all over the world. You can check in Egypt if there's one there, contact them, and maybe they try to take a couple lessons, apprentice, and or just take a couple lessons with them. I'm sure they'll be nice
sometimes
enough to do it.
Sometimes
they even pay you and stuff, because usually they need
you
help
work and you learn like old trades.
It's literally a trade like anything else. Exactly. So
you would be an apprentice and then a master.
So try that, or just like I said, call fluteworld.com or email fluteworld.com. And they have literature that you can buy and learn a little bit through books, but you have to learn through, or buy a junk flute and rip it apart, put it together.
Like you would learn how to build houses in a book. You know?
No,
you need someone
exactly.
To show you how to put the bricks in.
Exactly, that's it. Two or three more questions, and I think then we'll call it a night because it's getting a little late. I cannot play long phrases. Do you have any breathing control tips from Trevania Turner?
Yeah, I practiced some with my student earlier.
What was it? For instance, what was this one?
Did
you do?
That one is nice. So you breathe in. Well, first, before you breathe in, you empty your lungs because then you have more space to breathe in.
Mm-hmm.
If you're already half full, you're not going to breathe as much. As if you're completely empty. So you breathe out. Then you breathe in. Then you breathe out again. And when you get to the end of the air you have, and you think you don't have any more, you go. You pulse. I'm going to say it. You pulse the air out. So you use all those muscles around your lungs to pulse. When you think you don't have any more air, you do that, and then you can feel those muscles. And then when you take your flute, you can use them to really press. Because sometimes we think we don't have any more air, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good way. So you breathe out to empty your lungs. Then you breathe in as much as you can. Mm-hmm. You can use Hawaii. So ha is the...
Hawaii.
Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So ha, you fill up your belly.
Mm-hmm.
Wa, you fill up your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And he, just hear the...
The collarbones and stuff, those areas.
Okay,
yeah.
So you go... And then you're full.
It's like the natural way of breathing up. Like, it's nothing forced. Just...
It's a lot of air.
It's a heck of a lot of air.
So you do that, and then you breathe out just normally. And then when you're at the end of that, you go, you pulse. You don't take air in. You just pulse, pushing as much as you can. And then when you can't do it anymore, you breathe in. and you relax.
Uh-huh.
And then you try to remember the feeling. And then you can take your flute and do the same thing, but with your flute. And you can play very softly.
Uh-huh.
I won't breathe in
too
much,
right.
So it doesn't take too much time, uh-huh. because it can be long.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that I'm really pressing.
Right.
And I'm really getting everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, mm-hmm. one thing is that sometimes when we don't have enough air anymore, we tend to bend backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But that just makes it more difficult to press. If you bend backwards, your muscles are extended. You can't press them.
No. Yeah.
So when you don't have much air left, mm-hmm. and you still need to blow out, bend forward, mm-hmm. and then it's going to help you push the air out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the... It's not the way... Then the. It's not our first intuition.
No, right.
But that's the right way,
but that's the right way to do it.
Worst way to do it.
Yeah. Hopefully that helps. One more question. I have a question on vibrato. At the beginning stage, do you want to pulse from the abdominal, or do we just want to keep the support? I feel that I run out of both air and strength very quickly.
Hmm. I would be interested in hearing that. I feel it's the whole air column that is moving.
Yeah, when I think of the air column, I think here and here, just here and here a little bit. It's going like that, like roar, vertically, if you're looking at it vertically.
But I think in the very beginning, you should use your abdominals, and it's going
to go
eventually. But in the very beginning, just to get it going, so
mm-hmm.
you might have to use... And right now, it's more here that it's being controlled in the throat, but... As I said in the video about vibrato, if you think about it in the throat from the beginning, you're going to mm-hmm. close your throat and it's going to sound like a goat like this.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't want that.
No.
So everything's open, the throat is open, and really it's just you're pulsing the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To make the pitch go up and down a little bit. Mm. Because air speed is controlling pitch as well.
Mm.
Controls intonation, so you're just bending the pitch with your air speed. You go faster and slower in a way. But I visualize it as if my air column was going wider and what's the opposite of wider?
Wider?
And
wider and narrow?
Narrower.
Wider and narrower, like, yeah. Uh-huh.
I visualize it like that. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but it's a visualization that helps, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
No, it's pretty much the same. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's all the questions for this time. No more questions for now, but yeah. Well, not this. Yeah, but we answered a lot. Yeah.
Answered,
yeah, it's great. Yeah, totally. We answered most of them. Yeah.
It's great that we answered it.
So, yeah, we do this every 2 weeks. This is Flute Channel, the Flute Channel's Flute Talk podcast. Be sure to also check us out on patreon.com/theflutechannel. There you can support us even more so we can do more stuff like this and even more stuff and more videos. As usual, we usually do about 3 videos a week. And our next live stream will be at Just Practicing sometime next weekend. And we all we hope you have a nice Valentine's Day. And which is on Wednesday, I think. Happy practicing. And if you guys have any questions or comments, be sure to put them down below in this video or on any of our other videos. La 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 la. And be sure to like this video if you haven't liked it. And if you haven't subscribed yet or you're new here, be sure to subscribe. And we will talk to you guys next time.
Thanks
See you later.
For watching.
Yeah, thanks for watching and thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.